You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
Thank you very much. My name is Danish Khalik. I am the Regional Talent Solutions Manager for Experis IT. And Experis is part of the Manpower Group. They're about a $23 billion company. We've got RPO capabilities. We specialize in the, basically the staffing industry. And, a lot of what I do is really focused around business development, account management, and delivery of our IT direct hire capabilities for the Texas market, right? So if it's a direct hire role in Texas, it's my responsibility.
Awesome. Thank you, Danish, for joining us on Ivy Podcast today. Really appreciate your time. How long you've been with the current organization?
Yeah, so actually I am approaching my 90-day mark pretty soon. It's exciting, right? I've ran the entire gamut of oil and gas before this, so I'm diving into IT. So it's a learning process, but a lot of the same tips and tricks and skills that you use, on one side of the fence is very similar to the other side of the fence, right? In talent acquisition, it's kind of like recruitment. You just kind of focus and narrow down on your industry. There are some slight nuances, but overall, if you're successful in one sector, you can be successful in the other ones also.
Right. Absolutely. And you've been in talent acquisition for most of your career?
Yeah, my entire career, actually. Almost 10 years, I think like 9.5, almost 10 years. Yeah. So it's been both on the talent acquisition side and also kind of dabbling in operational HR too.
Great. Well, that's super exciting. A lot of questions I have for you today is around talent acquisition. Obviously, it's a very, very highly requested topic on our podcast, a lot of, mainly because of our audience. There's half of our audience are, executives themselves who participate on the podcast. So they represent a big portion of our listeners. And also the other half is, the early stage career professionals who are just coming up the ranks or maybe in transition, maybe looking for new opportunities. So talent acquisition is always relevant, is always, an interesting topic for us. So from your standpoint, what are some of the most effective tools that talent acquisition professionals are not utilizing yet they probably should in order to deliver, value for their clients? Everyone's probably using pretty standard tools such as, the LinkedIn and other search engines. But curious, is there like a secret weapon in your toolbox that you go to on a daily basis? Just share some insights with us.
Sure. So, I think the ultimate secret weapon is a referral, because you can use any technology that you want to try to find someone. But I'm a huge believer that talent acquisition and the recruitment process and placing a viable candidate that is going to have longevity in their career with an employer, it's more than just can someone do the job, right? Just like there are tons of recruiters out there. It's more than just a technical capability, right? It boils down to cultural fit. It boils down to, is this person at the right point in their life to take a job, right? I believe several times that, the best candidate in the industry is not always the best candidates that's on the market, mm-hmm. right? There's a difference. Most hires that you see are going to be people that are passive candidates, right? That high quality A+ candidate that's applying. And so a lot of those get shared through word of mouth, right? So kind of understanding, how do I leverage the current network I have to find this person that is a cultural fit, a technical fit, and really just at the right point in their life to step into this role.
Right. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you. At the end of the day, it's a contact sport. It's, the best talent, usually they don't sit on the bench. They don't sit and wait. It takes a great deal of networking. It takes a great deal of, you know, referral, like you said, to find the best, the unicorns out there. Mm-hmm. So I can totally relate with everything that you're talking about. So you've been in staffing and talent acquisition for quite some time, quite, you know, a few years. What trends do you foresee will come out of current times? Are there any specific talent acquisition trends that you're observing? What's on your mind?
Yeah, so actually, I think the biggest thing that we have going on right now is a buzzword or a buzz phrase, right? It's borderless talent, right? There is no borders to talent anymore, especially with the work from home, right? I'll give you an example. So there is an organization in Texas. They're a local organization. They're small to mid-size, right? And they're in the financial sector. Now, because of the entire dynamic of work, they have access to talent in Manhattan, right? So they can pull talent from these powerhouses in Manhattan, right? That they didn't necessarily have access to or the ability to even consider. Now, it's a different story if someone at, you know, the headquarters over there is going to take the role. But I think that's a huge thing, right? Like I see, especially in the startup culture, mm-hmm. right? That, you know, talent from California is moving to Texas. They've got Silicon Valley over there. We've got Silicon Hills in Austin.
We have Silicon Beach.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah, Florida. There you go. And so, you know, most talent is working remotely right now. And so there are no borders. I think borderless talent is going to, it's a huge game changer, not only just in the United States, but, you know, internationally as well. There is a lot more access to knowledge globally mm-hmm. and the people that own that knowledge and can implement it. So I think that, you know, that's definitely a trend that I see in the future that is going to probably hold steady.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. And if not, actually grow even more, because at the end of the day, definitely. A lot of organizations now experiencing that firsthand to be able to expand their reach when it comes to talent and remote work, and they see the results, that there's no more experimentation. Everyone just almost had to do that. Yep. And that's, you know, absolutely, that's an exciting trend. And I love the, you know, the term borderless talent. I think that's spot on. As far as attracting the top talent, whether that's for your organization or for your clients, share with us a little bit more in terms of the actual strategies that have proven to work well for you, or something that maybe didn't work and you learned from that experience, as far as really niche positions that are very hard to fill and actually, you know, attracting a very, you know, top of the line talent.
Sure. So, you know, I touched on networking. As you said, I love how you put it. This is a contact sport.
Right.
And that's exactly right. But I think that we have to look at a holistic approach to how are we contacting our people, right? Word of mouth is one. Social media is another, right? Like, what is your social media presence? I think that's huge right now. Mm-hmm. If anything, just to have that reminder and ingrain in your mind or in the candidate's mind that this is an employer that is present, right? If they're popping up on your Instagram feed, right? Then they're relevant to you, mm-hmm. right? So this is an employer that's relevant to me. They connect with me on some sort of baseline that I have a certain level of comfort, right? And so that being said, once you do have the initial, I would say, you know, engagement or interest, mm-hmm. you got to know your customer, right? So something attractive about a job may not be the same thing that's attractive about a job or an organization to someone else, right? Someone may want a higher salary. Someone may value vacation time, right? Mm-hmm. Over that. I was just talking to a rock star candidate yesterday. He's like, you know what? I am more willing to go with a smaller company. This guy is like, he's already done everything, right? He's done everything. And he's like, it's not about the money anymore, right? Like, I want a challenge. I want to know that what I'm doing is contributing to how IoT affects the world.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, there's different levels of what people find attractive, and what that is to each person. So you kind of have to understand the candidate before you can kind of start your pitch, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned social media, which is often overlooked, and or sometimes it's being treated as just this kind of marketing mechanism to only promote a particular position that you may have. But in reality, it's a great platform to actually showcase your culture, showcase what the organization is all about, mm-hmm. who the leadership is. It doesn't necessarily have to be all about the positions that we have open. It's a great platform to really get the message out about, you know, who we are as an organization. So I think, you know, I couldn't agree more with you as far as leveraging the most obvious tools that are in front of us, yet often, you know, underutilized. When it comes to,
yeah, actually, you know, to your point, I definitely think it is underutilized. There are certain industries and sectors that are notorious, right? And they really flex that social media muscle. Mm-hmm. But for example, let's say oil and gas, like they're not doing it because it's just, that's just not how they operate.
Right. Absolutely. And it's not, you know, necessarily perceived as very, you know, sexy industry, I guess,
yeah,
to,
exactly. Yeah.
to go after, but it's a perfect opportunity to kind of break that stereotype.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. To take this conversation a little bit further, especially dealing with current times, when it comes to interviewing or even onboarding candidates, you know, remotely, it's a completely different animal, completely different experience. I'm curious to get your take on what has worked well for you and your clients through this period as they not only interview remotely, but as they onboard new employees. So I would imagine that's a completely different experience.
Yeah. And actually, the thing is, I think it starts from the initial phone call, right? Like this is all about candidate experience, mm-hmm. right? That's what initially, like if you got to look at this as like a sales process, right? Like, you're selling the candidate to the client and the client to the candidate, essentially, right? Yep. And so
matchmaking.
Yeah, hey, that's what we do. We're corporate matchmakers. I love it, right? We're talent agents.
Right.
And so once the client says, hey, I want this, right? Then an offer is accepted. So I think a lot of the times what happens is people drop the ball. Right. Once the offer is accepted, okay, that's it. He's starting. Fine. He'll figure it out. Now it's someone else's responsibility. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think that in this age of work from home, right, like everything needs to be high touch. Right. Like you need to follow up twice a week with someone. You need to make sure that you're building a relationship so that there's already some familiarity. There needs to be emails that are sent to this person, introducing them to the, you know, their hiring managers, their team, things like that before they even start.
Right.
Like before they even start, introductions need to be made so that on day one, they don't feel like the new kid in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They already feel like, oh, I have a cohort. I have a family. I have relationships, right? I have relationships that I can leverage. I have people that I can go to ask for help. And I think that is what the biggest thing is right now, is just everything needs to be high touch, following up, building relationships. And aside from that, you got to send your people goodies, right? You got to send your swag, right? Your swag bag, you got to have your water bottle, you know, koozie, whatever it is, t-shirt, frisbee, sunglasses. Yeah, you got to send it.
Right, absolutely. That's almost becoming, you know, the standard to do that. It used to be, you know, only the kind of these, you know, very, very popular organizations like, you know, LinkedIn and the Netflixes of the world used to do that. But now it's almost expected for every organization to engage with their new employees at that level. So I love those examples that you're talking about. That is from a standpoint of that remote interview process. What have you seen lately to be of you know, a best practice almost or a strategy that has worked well for you and some of the candidates, I guess, that you prepare for these remote interviews? Share with us some maybe practical recommendations, what, you know, besides from kind of the background and, you know, making sure that you look okay, what are the different strategies that you implement?
Sure. So I think number one, it's twofold, right? The candidate needs to be prepared, but also the hiring managers and the interview panel needs to be prepared too, right? So on the candidate side, if you've got a door, lock it, right? You don't want kids running in. You don't want your cat or dog or your spouse running in there. Mute your phone. Obviously, you know, the point you touched on, look professional.
Right.
Try to remove any clutter that you may have. And, you know, we talked about lighting too. So you got to make sure your lighting is right. And just making sure that on the candidate side, you're mentally prepared, right? And in the right headspace,
mm-hmm.
right? I think on the company side, one thing that you need to do is you need to make sure that the people that are going to interview the person are prepared as well, right? Right. That means maybe testing your Skype, having someone call you if it's a Skype, Zoom, Teams, whatever format you're using, and that you're communicating interview details, right? That's probably more on the coordinator end, but obviously when it is, who it's with, what platform, anything that needs to be prepared for the candidate beforehand. And I guess, you know, like any general interview tips, like the ones that I just shared for a candidate, that should be going out from the client end too, right? The hiring company should be sharing those tips with the interviewee,
right.
And the interviewer. So I think those things, you know, are definitely some standard practical tips that are like best practices. They seem pretty simple, but I think, you know, I've seen some funny stories of, you know, kids walking in or a dog jumping in someone's lap or, you know, and then coffee being spilled or what have you. But you kind of just you gotta prepare for it, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, it seems rudimentary, seems like very basic, you know, things, but oftentimes, you know, they're overlooked. And also, I like what you're saying, that it's not just the candidate being prepared, but also the interviewer, the hiring manager, that, you know, don't think that you can just show up and, you know, in a t-shirt and shorts and just sit down and interview the person, that it's all about, you know, candidate proving themselves to you. No, it's a two-way street. You know, it's a dual interview. The candidate is also interviewing you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I always tell candidates, right? Like, be prepared to ask questions. Like, this is your opportunity to interview mm-hmm. the company.
Right.
Right. So what's important to you? Ask them. Management mm-hmm. style, you know, what are some of their challenges or anything. But I think it is very important for it to be a two-sided interview. So I love that point.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Because a lot of times, you know, I was on both sides of the table. I was, you know, the hiring manager, I was the candidate. And a lot of times it's you as a candidate, you perceive the interview as kind of that one-way street, that it's just me going in there, proving myself that I am, you know, qualified for this particular role. But really having that mentality that you also need to interview not only the manager or the leadership of that organization, but also, does it at least seem like the right culture for you to thrive in? So a lot of those things that you're talking about definitely resonate. You've been in oil and gas. You switched to, you know, you're right now in IT. What are the different kind of skill, the most in-demand skill sets that you currently see as very challenging to find? And what are some of the strategies that you deploy to really go after and target those particular individuals? Because IT is, I would imagine, you know, the approach and the techniques to target that is the same all across industries. But when it comes to that domain expertise, I think that's a little bit of a different story. So just curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, so So I think that there are two like real in-demand skill sets right now. Number one, cybersecurity.
Oh yeah,
Cybersecurity is like
it's huge.
everything. It's huge right
And COVID really proved that. And look where we started with Zoom, and how far they've came about. I think I'm with you on that. The cybersecurity is top of the line.
Cybersecurity is what I think developers were, a while ago. And I think that, there's one similarity actually that I see across the industry is that, so with cybersecurity, it seems like there are some very senior level people that are in roles. And there's not too many mid-level people in cybersecurity. You have people that are like, they're preparing to, go in because it's hot right now. But there's not like that, let's say 8 to 15 year guy, right? Or like 8 to 12 year guy. You've got people at like 2 to 5 years and then 12 plus.
It's a
Right.
big
So I
gap.
think, so it's a big gap. So I think that, that's definitely and there's this like knowledge gap, right? That people are gonna, there's gonna be a struggle there. I definitely think that there's gonna be a struggle there. The other, I guess, like what we can call is, in demand skill, the way you put it, is I think personally, full stack developers. The reason why is because you see a lot of people that do front end and back end, right? And they're separate, right? But I think that what organizations are demanding now, right, are a much leaner workforce, right? So then people are having to like upskill, right? So if you're a back end guy, you have to take a front end boot camp because we need a full stack guy, right? If you're a full stack guy, you need to take a back end boot camp or something like that because we need someone that can do everything. And I think that finding that is going to be much more important for organizations because they do want to run, leaner.
Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you. When we talk about lean operations, one first thing, kind of first term that comes to my mind is contingent workforce. Can you share your thoughts on kind of that contingent workforce? Is it here to stay? Is it here to grow? What are some of the challenges from that standpoint? What are the advantages? Curious to get your take on that.
So I definitely think that contingent work is it's on the rise, right? More so right now than direct hire and permanent opportunities. I think it's twofold. I think that organizations want to mitigate risk on their end, right? And they also don't want to just hire people and fire people. We're in a time of huge uncertainty, right? And I think that's one part of the equation. The other part is that before COVID, we had this huge, I don't want to call it a trend, but desire for the people want to really dive into the gig economy, right? So it seems like what we call contingent labor is just a new word for the gig economy. Or sorry, the gig economy is the new word for contingent labor. It's just kind of like a sexier term, if that's what you want to call it, right? Because we've got contractors, especially on the tech side, right? Like people jump around on the tech side, like it's, one project to the next project to the next project to the next project. And that's literally that's the gig economy,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
It just wasn't called that. Now, I guess what people are doing is instead of it's called a gig economy because you're doing whatever you're doing, working on a beach, right? Or somewhere else,
It
right?
was
You're
perceived as gig economy as you taking on these smaller projects for the different clients, but at the end of the day, with everyone shifting remote, it's like you said, everyone is a gig worker, everyone is remote. Like you and I could be anywhere on this planet and still doing our job, and we are gig workers at the end of the day. And I love that analogy because I agree with you that even I was in the same mentality when I was an IT consultant, management consultant, that when I was thinking gig worker, I usually thought of, oh yeah, somebody who does, you know, the logos for the different companies, and you know, that's all they do. But at the end of the day, yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about.
So yeah, gig economy. I think it's the same thing. It's just basically a trendier way to put it, right? Or trendy way to describe what it is.
Right, right, absolutely. Danish, I'm going to put you on the spot here, you know, a little bit. It's, you know, the something that I love personally. I'm very entrepreneurial in spirit. I have a lot of side projects and I invest in, and I come from, you know, entrepreneurial background. So new ideas as far as what excites you these days, or what are the different ideas that you may have? If you just imagine if you had $1 million sitting on the side, and you were to invest into something, what would that be? What, maybe it's a specific idea, maybe it's a trend, maybe it's an industry. What's sexy to you?
Oh man, aerospace. Really? Specifically, yeah, specifically, right? Like what SpaceX is doing, right? Aerospace. I think, you know, it is it's the next frontier. There will be space tourism. Like there definitely will be space tourism. That and self-driving vehicles, I think if I could invest right now, that's what I would invest in. Because, you know, I was actually reading this article about Mercedes. Okay, Mercedes-Benz is stepping out of the self-driving game, right? Because they said that they don't step into anything that they won't win. And Tesla is so far ahead of them and everyone else in the industry that they don't feel like they have a shot at really making an impact, which I think it takes a lot of guts to do that, right? Being Mercedes, one of their slogans is the best or nothing. And they're really sticking true to that with this decision that they've made.
I love that. I love that mentality, you know, the best or nothing. And it's getting involved only in something that you feel like you can dominate. That's an excellent, excellent advice and recommendation.
Yeah. And so along with self-driving, IoT, I mean, it's like the next thing, right? IoT. I think also one technology that is going to really be a game changer is VR, right? There's a company called Magic Leap.
Oh yeah,
you know Magic Leap,
client of ours. They're awesome. Right down the street. Their headquarters is here in Plantation, Florida.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, there's so many applications that company can add value to. I mean, whether it is training doctors, right, or even in training doctors for surgery. Or even in the interview process, right? If you need someone to give you an example of something, right? You can have them do it real time, live, right there. You run through a simulation, and you can gauge their technical capabilities right there, right? Like I gave the example of a surgeon, but even a technician, right? Any sort of technician, you can run a simulation, right? Say, hey, this is the problem. Show me how you're going to fix it.
Right. Absolutely. I love that example. And, you know, healthcare in general has, you know, so much great potential. And we've seen the emergence of some really, really cool technologies coming out of, especially current times, you know, like e-health, telehealth.
A lot of those things,
it's, you know, those are so much potential there. It's just completely disrupting the whole, you know, industry in general. That stuff is so cool.
No, I think, you know, I was watching this video of, you know, mentioning, you know, virtual reality. So there are these sunglasses that they're not sunglasses. They're a visor or some sort of thing you put on your face. And so it's for health and wellness. And basically there, as you're jogging, it will show you an avatar in front of you, some sort of hologram, right? And then you race against this hologram, right? And the hologram kind of, like they have this AI that can like tell you where you're at, where is your peak performance, where you need to like kick it up a notch, right? And so that really goes to number one, leveraging health and wellness, but also like the psychology of competition, right? To beat someone out, right? You beat the hologram, which is huge. That's a huge sense of accomplishment right there.
Right, very, for sure.
And so I love the interplay between technology and health and wellness and psychology and how all of this kind of intertwines to really go into product development. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that, a lot of intersections, right, between different industries, like the example that I just showed you.
Right. I love it how our conversation went from talent acquisition to investment ideas into startups.
Hey man. No, I'm loving the talk too.
A lot of times I have to like contain myself also not to shift, you know, the whole purpose of Ivy podcast and also go into like, you know, startup ideas and things like that, because it's, you know, it's a different topic on its own. I'm sure we can do a whole new episode about that.
Hey, yeah, no, there's some incredible emerging technologies. And you know, like one thing is, I know I'm probably going to go off on this other thing again, but every time there is a new technology, right, there are other supporting technologies that go into that, right? And I think that's, we're going to see a lot more on the startup side of things. I think a majority of it, it's going to revolve around technology. Right. The majority of it, everything is going to revolve around technology. And so I'm really excited to see what happens in the future. I think that we're really going to have some game-changing things that come through.
No doubt. Absolutely. And, you know, you've shifting to IT. Sounds like, you know, you came to the right place at the right time.
Hey, man, that was the idea.
Right. Everything was by design. So that's great. That's super exciting, man. That is, last but not least, what are you currently reading, or what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
One book I always recommend to others is Start With Why, right? By Simon Sinek. And it's a great book. Number one, to help you understand yourself on a deeper level, but also, you know, turning this all around, going back to talent acquisition, if you understand, number one, what a company is trying to achieve and why they're trying to achieve it, and you understand what your candidate wants and why they want it, right? Someone could say, oh, well, I want a $350,000 base, right? Or that whatever the base is. It's not really about money. What is that money going to get you? Right. Oh, well, I have five kids I need to put through college at the same time. Right. So it's understanding the why, like what is really driving that. It's not that this person is like money hungry or greed or anything like that.
Yep.
It's because they want to take care of their family. They've got five kids in college and, yep, you know, college ain't cheap.
Yeah.
Right. So I think Start With Why is a great book. Everyone should read it, regardless of what industry you're in. I think it'll help you understand yourself and what motivates you, and how to understand others on a deeper level and kind of be more sympathetic.
Right.
Sympathetic towards people. And I think that's something that I personally try to work on, right? Because everyone has got something going on, right? Mm-hmm. And you just gotta be patient and kind of, you know, peel back the layers until they're comfortable to really open up. And then I think that's what really makes a good match, right? Both on the candidate side and on the company side. So when those values align, right, everyone wins.
I love that advice, you know, being sympathetic. And it's, you know, you started with that book recommendation, which is great, by the way. But at the end of the day, you're absolutely right. Trying to put yourself in the shoes of the others and don't jump to conclusions. You know, you never know what's going on the other side. And I think that's so important. It's such a simple advice and it's very powerful. So Danish, thank you so much for ending it on such a powerful note. It was a really great conversation with you today. It was short, but packed with a lot of really cool ideas, really cool strategies. So definitely we appreciate you jumping on and sharing your expertise with us. Looking forward to staying in touch with you. And, you know, as always, just, you know, stay, you know, just let us know if there's anything that we can do.
Hey, John, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. We'll definitely be in touch there.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.